Welcome out to the Ogilvy Day Stage. This is by far the biggest crowd we've had in our 3 days here. It's easy to see why with this topic. We have two speakers here from Google, Aman Govil, who's the product marketing manager, and Cecilia Wogan-Silva, who's the director of agency, talking about a topic of can the biggest ideas fit in the smallest ad spaces, where they've taken four campaigns and reimagined them in the digital space. Please welcome our speakers.
Hello, everybody. It's later in the day, so it's easy to get a bigger crowd, I think, versus the breakfast hour. So thank you all so much for coming. It's a pleasure to be here. I am Cecilia Wogan-Silva, and I'm the director of agency development, especially among creative agencies for Google. And it is really my pleasure to be here. I'm very excited about what we have to share. I'm hoping that many of you have already gotten a little flavor of some of this, maybe by a short visit over to the Google Village. But if not, maybe you're asking, what is it that we really are talking about tonight? And so before we begin, I'm just going to dive into a short 90-minute lecture on the challenges of digital creative advertising. No, I am not going to do that, because many of you are probably creative people and just want to see the darn work, and so we're going to do that as fast as possible. I do want to provide a little bit of context. I think that really I do hear this question, and I engage in this debate quite a bit about what really is possible in terms of designing phenomenal creative work in the digital era. And I think we all acknowledge that it goes way beyond dancing bunnies selling mortgages. I believe that we are pushing past the stigma of terrible banners that are irrelevant and ridiculous and oftentimes virus-ridden. And I think what we're seeing is this a tremendous growth of technology that's actually fueling new innovation in display advertising and a lot of other means of advertising. I'm talking about video. I'm talking about cross-channel integration. I'm talking about targeting of all kinds, geo-targeting, demo targeting, audience targeting, targeting, remarketing, retargeting. So while all of those tools are coming to bear, it's been interesting to watch that obviously they've had a tremendous impact in the direct response space over the last few years in particular. But the question really remains now, is it possible to leverage all of these amazing tools to create an emotional experience? And this is one of those questions that all of our brands are asking us at Google, and I'm sure asking many of you who are in the industry of advertising in one way, shape, or form. So, well, you might think Google knows everything. We might know what you're actually searching for with your next query before you've even completed typing it. But we don't know everything. We are trying to understand this ourselves. And as is the nature of Google, when it comes to something that we don't understand, we launched an experiment. And that is what we're talking about tonight, is that experiment. I call it an experiment in time travel, if you will. It's like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure in advertising. Because what we're doing is looking back in order to look forward. We're trying to answer the question, how can digital technology help us reimagine storytelling in the digital age? So to start, we looked at a couple of key ad campaigns from earlier days, not just any ad campaigns, ones that had huge impact for their time, ones that you will remember with fondness, and they might bring a tear. And then we considered, how could we leverage the core strategy that was put to work on these campaigns long ago in today's digital world? How could we actually reimagine these same briefs, these same stories on a digital canvas? And now this isn't about just taking an old commercial and stuffing some, you know, cool assets into a banner. This is really about reimagining the entire experience but trying to stay true to the original concept. So to do that well, we knew that we needed to go back to the source. The source being, of course, the brief itself, the insights themselves, but also the legendary creative directors who drove the process many, many years before. And so over the last few months, we've had the amazing honor of working with these legendary creative directors on their original ideas and how they came to pass. And then we took some time to talk a little bit about what's changed in the advertising marketplace. answered questions about how things have been evolving so that they felt that they actually could also work with these same tools. And then together, it got really fun. We got back to work. And they came back to work paying close attention to how a new campaign could be crafted with digital means. So this was not sourced just from Google. This was sourced really, truly from the minds of some of the greatest creative directors in the industry. So today, you're going to hear a little bit about the process, and you're going to hear a little bit about the output. But I firmly believe that no scientific experiment is complete without its lab book, because, and I'm sure I think a lot of artists in the room can relate to this concept, it's not the output alone, but it's the process that's really important for us to kind of dive into the conversation. So we were very delighted that we were joined by Doug Pray, an award-winning documentary filmmaker proclaimed for Art and Copy, who participated in the project with us and was able to actually help capture both the stories themselves from the creative directors that we worked with, along with the challenges that the team was facing as we tried to engage with this new evolution of the campaigns themselves. So if you haven't had a chance to look at some of those assets, I just simply wanted to acknowledge his phenomenal work on the project and give you the opportunity to go and check it out if you're ever interested, www.projectrebrief.com. And with that, I will simply say, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Google is very good at facilitating conversation, and that's really what this is intended to be. An experiment, a conversation to start the dialogue. We use display as a portal into the larger discussion around more of a multi-channel digital experience, but we really need to continue that conversation with you. So I invite you to participate as we continue from here forward. With that, I would like to introduce Aman Govil, who has been running this project day and night with a tremendous amount of passion and energy. Aman helped initiate the project in the first place and actually is featured in several of these clips, so he's kind of a movie star. So we like a little star power in all of our presentations. So Aman Govil, I'll hand it over to you.
Thanks, Cecilia. I have to say, I'm a bit flattered by the number of people who are in this room, to be honest. So what we are going to go through today is four demos of things that we've been working on since last year, where we started with, as any marketer would start, trying to solve the problem about how do I show, not tell? You know, there's a promise that we have made with digital advertising and technology, and how do you bring it to life, right? I mean, a lot of us think about digital marketing, but what we started thinking about, how do you do marketing for the digital age, right? And then flip the question on its head. So what you're going to see today are very sort of experimental ads in terms of where we sit with our technology, built with, you know, tools and assets that are available to everyone out there. We did not go and invent new technology. We just took systems and building blocks off the shelf and put them together in ways that they hadn't been done before, right? So hopefully you'll get a taste of where we are going. And as Cecilia said, this is going to be a start of what truly is to come in digital advertising. Because the context is we've only turned 18, and so, you know, compared to other media, we're quite young. So the first ad we're going to talk about is from Volvo. It's in 1962. Emil Gargano of Alien Gargano introduced Volvo to America with the first TV commercial that they played. All right, and I'm going to play that for you right now, and then we'll see what came off that.
Volvo gets over 25 miles in a gallon of gas, just like the little economy cars, and runs away from other popular priced compacts in every speed range. Like you hate it. Cheaper than psychiatry.
Drive it like you hate it, right? In 1962, Volvo was a very different car, and it was a very different way of talking about cars. But in that ad, you know, in that 60-second TV spot that you saw, was a very simple insight, that of durability. Move. Oh, there we go. Okay. So durability, right? And it was based on a very simple fact that Emil caught on to, that on average, a Volvo lasted 3 to 4 times longer than its competition of that point, right? So he took that on and brought to life what Volvo meant at that time, durable, reliable. And he also tied into the fact from the drive it like you hate it line that isn't, you don't buy cars because it has more horsepower or drives faster. You have a relation with your car. You have an aspiration that you're buying, right? And it was those two things that he caught on and brought into that life with drive it like you hate it. So the question to us was, great, 50 years down the line, how do you bring that to life again? It was a fact. The fact remains a fact. And as we went through the process, Emil kept, you know, taking us back to the insight about durability and telling stories in the relation that you have with your car rather than the ad itself. So now I'm going to take you to a little clip of how we actually stumbled upon the idea that we're going to demo and how we transformed this ad. Of course, it was through a search query. So let's play that one.
Let's keep it hugely informal. We don't have to worry about protocol or courtesies of any kind. First, let's articulate an objective, then a strategy, then let's look at the work to see if the work meets both of those criteria.
He kept telling us every step, like, well, why do people buy cars? How do you compare it to other cars? He didn't push us towards his ad. He didn't talk about his ad at all. He went going back to the car and how do we bring out the relationship between you and the car.
I think that's, we're trying to crack two things. One is reimagine this ad, but also to prove how amazing that the contextual advertising could be. Or
have you considered taking an actual owner who may have 240,000 miles on a Volvo?
I was looking at the Volvo 100,000 mile club, and the guy who started that is a guy who has 2.7 million miles on his Volvo.
Now there's the guy. You have to get a hold of that guy.
That's great. He's in New York.
See, that to me is great advertising. When you can take something like that and turn that into a nice piece of human film. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Boy, that's real substance. That's wonderful.
How do we make that? How do we tailor that for a banner?
That's your job.
So that was a little clip from the film that Cecilia mentioned earlier. That we actually stumbled upon this story as we were trying to find that idea. That 50 years down the line, there was not about us showing, hey, drive it like you hate it, to find a car and get a computer to drive it like you hated it. But the story, which was the car is durable, and nothing talks about durability than a car that has lasted 46 years. So the story of Irv Gordon, as you saw in that film, was something that we stumbled upon with the search query. And luckily, he happened to be 30 miles from where we were. So I'm going to take a step back and talk a little bit about Irv Gordon and what happened with that story. So Irv Gordon has owned a Volvo since 1966 and is a owner of world record number of 2.957 million miles when we last checked, and he's approaching 3 million miles on his. And he has the same Volvo that was featured in one of the ads during the campaign a little later after its launch. We contacted the guy and said, can we chronicle your story from the day you bought the car to here through, you know, really colorful videos and you know, milestones in your life and bring it to life, you know, through video. And then, using digital as the social and the interactive medium, the insight was, how do you extend it beyond that, right? It's to not look at his past, but look at his future. Because his stories are still being written. So the ad is not about telling, hey, Irv Gordon's driven 2.9 million miles. The fact Irv Gordon is counting down to 3 million miles, and can we all be a part of a very unique human story that drives around, passion of driving a car. All right. So what I'm going to play for you is a 90-second film that we have done, and this is the story of his first weekend from the day he bought the car. And let's watch it together. It'll give you a little bit of sense of the person, the car, and the character, and the relations.
Thank you.
first weekend I had my car, I drove it more miles than most people drive their car in months.
You can drive a Volvo like you hate it because they're built that way. It was just made to run at high speeds all day long.
Everybody was car crazy in the 50s. If you wanted to catch up in those days, you didn't do it online. You had to get in the car first. The world has changed a lot since that drive, but not in my car. I bought the car on a Friday night and just started driving. I drove it to my usual haunts, all around Long Island. I didn't even stop to sleep. I was having such a good time. And then I took rides to New Jersey and Connecticut and up to Massachusetts and back again. Before I knew it, it was Monday. I'd already driven the car 1,500 miles. Some people are so worried about beating up their cars that they keep it in the garage all day. Those people may think that the way I drive is crazy, but to me, they're the crazy ones.
So as you can see, the man has a very homespun view on life, you know, somebody who's been driving 2.9 million miles. I think the average out of it is about 153 miles a day, every day since 1966, for him to have hit that. And quote me on that number, it's, you know, I did it in my head, that math. Just now?
I'm throwing that into your bio next time.
But, you know, so that's how we establish, you know, sort of relation with Irv and the car, as you saw. And as we've gone through, you know, trying to build this campaign with Volvo, we found multiple stories like this, right? And all of them relate to different people. You know, over 46 years, he's gone through so many roles. He's been the driver. You know, he's been, you know, the lover who took his wife out on his first date. He's been a father, you know, who, you know, went with his kids, you know, to educational trips around national parks. So what it gives you is, as a brand and as, you know, for this experiment as well, a, you know, breadth of stories that you can tell to different audiences. Audiences that Volvo normally would not want to associate with or, you know, would not think of associating with as far as content goes, right? So what I'm going to do right now is switch to a demo on an iPad on how we make sort of, you know, translate. Have you switched to that? Okay, cool. You know, how we bring that story to life in a digital way. So we've actually made this ad that works iPads, Androids, as well as YouTube, you know, all desktop screens. So, you guys see it?
It's up.
Okay. So let's start with the Volvo ad. This app's going to come out pretty soon. So what you're seeing here is a very standard 728 by 90 banner ad that actually will lead into a beautiful HTML5 experience that feels very much like an app. And the point I was trying to make was, right, we looked at multiple types of stories in his life around travel. If you go to dining, you'll get a completely different story of how he took his wife on a 260-mile dinner date the first time they met. So let's go back to the travel piece we were looking at. So I launched the banner. It's going to play the same film we were looking at. Can I try and mute? Can we mute this? No, mute it. Yeah. So what you'll see is just, you know, what we've done contextually at every single point is you can see different parts of his story. So I'm going to point to that one. There he is in that. Oh, sorry. Going. Right. Skip past that. Okay. So we get into this beautiful interface, right? As I said, like app-like interface, where you can browse through all the beautiful stories from his life. And as you can see on top, unfortunately you can't see my finger, is odometer reading on every story and where he was in his point of life. So if you go today, the first thing we did was to actually hook up his car in 1966 Volvo's odometer straight to a display ad, you know, and broadcast its live mileage. Because every time he goes out for a cup of coffee, he's breaking his own world record. So that becomes a part of how you're following his journey to 3 million miles every time, you know, his mileage is increasing. Then we, of course, introduced him to Google Plus, so he can then, you know, start building his social feed, stuff that he's sharing about. We can go and participate in that conversation, with him, as you know, talking about new places to drive or interesting places that he's been to. Apparently, you know, he knows all the Waffle Houses in the country by heart. That's what his mechanic told us. And then on the other side, you can see is if he has the ability to turn this on. If he wants to, you know, this is a new way of doing check-ins. He just turns on a GPS in his car, and in the ad, you can see where he is and interact. Like, hey, Irv, you know, here's a new interesting place for you to check out around there. And going back to some of the other stories that we were looking at, you know, you can find interesting places from his life. You've chronicled his database of interesting places to go, interesting roads to take, right? Just don't take the short way, but take the long way to where you're trying to get to go. And people can interact with those pieces instead of flipping through some of these areas, as you can see, right? And of course, Volvo, in all that piece, also keeps talking about the most relevant piece as to their brand. So instead of trying to give people just information about what their car can do, we now bring them in through a very unique story and then, you know, tell them, oh, yeah, if I'm going on a family drive, I may need a, you know, bigger loading area, or if I'm a driving enthusiast, I want a very responsive engine and a spontaneous adventure, you know, that may not have to wait. So, again, the point here being, across the board, we've taken his story and allowed everybody in the market to become a part of his story going forward. And then I was going to go back to my laptop. Okay, so this is an interesting way of storytelling, right? And Cecilia, you've been in the market a lot longer and looking at the way
not
people...
Not that much longer.
Well, actually, that's true. I'm pretty old.
<It's>
too, <yeah. laughs> So, you know, like, how do you see it from your perspective of how traditionally, you know, creative agencies and brand marketers have approached this versus what it means for the digital age?
Actually, I mean, I think the process is very much the same. It's kind of interesting when you launch the videos, a lot of people in the room look at it and go, well, those are videos. I can relate to that medium. This is very common. What's so different about this for the digital era? But as you keep going and you look at all the layers of content and different ways to open doors into the conversation, that's the magic of digital that allows for that. And what I also think of is, you know, I think of advertising like this, sort of like reading a great novel. Have you ever read a great novel and you're in the middle of the characters and you're sucked into it, and then you're making dinner for somebody, but you're still thinking about those characters? And so by way of all of these different layers of content, you can always rejoin the conversation that feels like it's been living and going on almost sort of while you were making dinner without you, but you can always jump back into the party. I think that it's very much also about finding new ways of connecting with audiences that might have otherwise been overlooked. It's like, oh, must be a car enthusiast, right? Must be a guy who loves great motors. Well, actually, maybe it's women who want to stay married to their husbands for a very long time and respect the sense of adventure, right? So the idea that this could be relevant content to new target audiences, it's worth experimenting, and that's permissible only by way of a digital delivery.
So speaking of that, you know, entertaining content.
I just made that up because you just asked me just now. I'd never thought about that until just now.
Mostly because I'd forgotten my piece. but the point is, actually, you hit on a really good point, right? Like, storytelling, right? That's a very colorful storytelling of a real human story. There's also the other part around entertainment,
right?
Which is what our next demo is going to take us from Alka-Seltzer. So here's a question: you know, raise your hand if any point of time in your life you've eaten too much and said, "I can't believe I ate the whole thing," right? So, and I'm going to show you the viral video or the water cooler conversation from 1972. That brought that to America. Some of you may remember this.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
You ate it, Ralph.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
No, Ralph, I ate it.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
Take two Alka-Seltzer.
Alka-Seltzer neutralizes all the acid your stomach has churned out. For your upset stomach and headache, take Alka-Seltzer and feel better fast.
Did you drink your Alka-Seltzer?
The whole thing.
Right. So, there we go. Ralph, right? So the inside there, as we started working with Bob Pasqualina and Howie Cohen, the original art director, copywriter team on this ad in 1972, they just spoke about two things, right? One was that it was a line that resonated with America. All of us could relate to it, like, I have been in that situation before, right? And the guy, being a very salt-of-earth guy, you know, sitting on his bedside late at night, you know, allowed that that connection to be a one-to-one connection with everyone, even if at that point it was across three broadcast networks, you know, going the same message going to everyone. So when we started looking at it 40 years down the line, our challenge was, how do you bring out that entertainment factor that all of us can relate to? And then how do you still personalize it using modern technology that's available to us and tell a story of this man like they were not able to tell, or the complete story of this man that they weren't able to tell back in 1972. So what did we come up with, right? As you can imagine, Ralph, you know, he probably has brothers, sisters, kids, friends, wife, Eleanor, that you saw there, right? So what we thought was, what if we told the Ralph story from 1972 in a 70s-like sitcom, which is branded entertainment content, which is highly personalized for everyone, right? And all of it leads to the same point about the day Ralph ate the whole thing. Because what America got in 1972 was an insight right at the end of his day. Nobody ever knew what he ate, and nobody knew how he got there. So that's what we're doing it. But again, we're taking a very unique approach with Alka-Seltzer, you know, and the creative team on how we did it. So why don't we hear from them on how they approached this concept when they were coming up with it?
I don't know where it comes from, but there is a process, and that is understand the problem, and then forget about it.
I sat down one time to try and define it, and I came up with what I call the four I's of creativity. First I is intuition, but there's an intuition, but we don't have very much information yet. So the second I is information. Let's find out what this is about. Let's see the technology. And then the third I is incubation. It's like a creative soup, you know. You go to sleep, you go in the shower, you're not thinking about it, and then all of a sudden the fourth I happens. It's inspiration. And then you have an idea. What if, just a thought, but I can't believe I ate the whole thing, 30 seconds, one line, and yet there's a whole life there, the whole story. He's got relatives, he's got friends, they've got their relationship.
Is that his wife? Or am I in drag?
You know what else it is? It's trust, because you got to be able to trust that whatever you say is going to be okay. And a stupid idea can lead to a great idea.
I don't like this idea. No, I'm saying.
Don't do that to me. If we went into this saying we have to improve on I Can't Believe Ate the Whole Thing, we'd be putting a bullet in our head. If we say that it really has to be totally reimagined and become something else, that's the opportunity.
To go find the essence and find a new way to express it.
All right. So as we saw, like, how do you completely re-envision this? So I'm about to show you right now is, you know, the day I ate the whole thing. Is a very sort of early preview of something that we haven't launched, so you're the first people who actually get to see it. And as with any sitcom, it's supposed to have an opening sequence, right? So we're going to show that opening sequence and the song that was actually written on the sets of shooting by Howie himself. Let's go into this. Before I go into that demo, right, so let me talk a little bit about the personalization bit that we were talking about. What you'll see is, you know, when Ralph starts driving his car, you know, we use geolocation database on IP to use and combine it with Street View to figure out, you know, have him drive on York streets, right? Based on, you know, if you're buying a media plan and you all target, you know, have a medium, low, high household income, you can change his life to become a part of that. Or if he has children, if you, you know, depending on the household that you're trying to target, you could introduce tweens or make it more relevant for, you know, people without teenagers. So I'll play a couple of clips here and it'll give you a sense. Actually, let's start with Austin. With tweens, refresh.
Don't let the itty bitty bumps in the road get you down. Put on a smile and head for the bright lights of town. If you're gonna do anything, do the whole thing. If you're gonna do anything,
right? So as you saw there, you
it's
know, you
funny.
Have kids.
I mean, right? They're laughing. That's entertainment.
Exactly. I've been listening to this song way too much. About 190 reviews. But the point is, you know, as you saw, like, when we saw Austin, you had Street View, you know, him driving down Congress. You saw, you know, the Austin little sign, and all of that is dynamically generated and imposed. What it allows you to do is it taps into a very simple insight, right? That if I see a music video that was shot in my university in the dorm that I grew up in, I instantly have a different reaction to it versus the exact same story shot someplace else, right? So that proximity and then things that people can relate to brings out a new story. Now let's change up a couple of things. Let's say he is San Francisco, high income, no children. Sounds about right. Just a joke.
Don't let the itty bitty bumps in the road get you down. Put on a smile and head for the bright lights of town. If you're gonna do anything, do the whole thing. If you're gonna do anything, do the whole thing. Life is a feast, so go and make it. Love's all around, just reach out and take it. If you're gonna do anything, do the whole thing, the whole thing.
Right. So that's just the introduction around, like, and this personalization carries through. But the second question that came up to us was, of course, is digital content, right? And the defining feature of digital is interactivity. But how do you build interactivity into this, which is fundamentally unique, you know, and is something people want to play with, right?
Oh, I have an idea.
Yes.
Maybe we could ask everybody to submit videos of, like, their gas pains. That would be interactive, right? I mean, you know, that would be like a way, it's a very relatable condition, and, you know, everybody's got a story, and we want it to be engaging, right? So we could get, like, some user-based videos of birth.
User-generated content,
yes,
that's great.
Yes, you know.
I mean, I have a beautiful example coming later about user-generated content.
It's the obvious choice, and I think you did better than that.
Well, I'll let these guys be the judge of it. But she actually, Cecilia brings up a very good point, right? Like, what she's saying is, very often we apply Occam's razor, like we just go to the simplest solution that's available to us, right? Or the most obvious solution that's available to us. And that may not always be the best way to engage people because people will play with what they want to play with. So I don't have that for demo, so you'll just have to sort of imagine it a little bit with me, right? Of the type of interactions we've done, right? So we've all played with this video where it's like, the video stops and it's like, does he get into the bus or does he not get into the bus? And you click and you go into a story and then you stop again, right? Which forces you to be a director. What if you flipped that on its head and did something like, the guy is driving around, you have the opportunity to change his radio station and choose the genre of music he's listening to. And every time you change the station, he has a completely different reaction to it, right? Or if you're watching this video on YouTube and the guy is sitting on his TV, the video on his TV is the same video that you're watching and he's just having different funny reactions to it based on the content and the type of video, right? So those are the type of things that we've been working on taking very simple things that are available to us through, you know, standard APIs and products and bring them in new, interesting, engaging ways, which, you know, further the engagement in display advertising.
I mean, that's interactive entertainment, right?
Yeah. So again, you know, interactive entertainment, that's fundamentally personalized. That's a screenshot from there. You know, here's another example of personalization, you know, which you also sort of mentioned. How do you make it interactive that somebody want to play with? So imagine every ad impression that you get gets a unique phone number, right? And you get a 20-second window. You can pick up your phone, a 30-second window. Pick up the phone, dial that number. You can actually have a conversation with Ralph right on your phone in the ad, right? That's a very unique, interesting way. And every time you talk to him and you say whatever you say, or third time you call him, he has a completely different reaction when you call him the first time because you're starting to annoy him with your phone calls, right? So it's going back to that point, like things that are personal to me, things that I can relate to, right, and things that entertain me, is where we think, you know, some of this content could go and what technology can enable, which has not really been, you know, possible up until a couple of years ago. So.
No additional comments, really. I mean, I've been making a couple of cracks just to help make the point. But very seriously, I think it is fascinating because I spent a lot of time working with agencies around the country, and it is amazing to see the uptake of interest on really being able to understand how effectively we can reach different target audiences, because that is key to having that personalized experience, right? You have to be able to understand who the target is that you're talking to be able to try to tweak and customize the experience a little bit. But I think that that's like
new, whereas what's baseline and that everybody's looking to accomplish is something that is entertaining, that's not just purely informational, and that does actually involve your participation, it engages you to participate. So very seriously, I just think that the targeting aspect is something that has so much opportunity just baked into it that creatives are starting to pick up on that now more than ever.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point you make, right? Like, targeting and all the media planning tools that have been used fundamentally to get the ad in front of the right person can now be used by creatives to change the content. You know, once you get to the right person, you want to make sure you have the right content in front of them. And that's kind of where this is going from. But I'm going to take us back for the next demo to the point that you made earlier about user-generated content, right? So,
burps, here they come.
Well, this is a different example. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's got to be entertaining. It's got to be something people want to do, right?
Right.
So we'll go into this demo now. But how many of you can recognize this ad? Just raise your hand. The We Try Harder line, right? Avis has had that line for 50 years, written by Paula Green in 1962. And, you know, it's been, I mean, it was just a syllogism that she wrote, which has stayed true for 50 years, that if you're number two, you have to try harder. But instead of me talking about this, I'm actually going to let Paula talk about this.
It's very simple, but if you look at it, it is an argument. It is a syllogism. We're number two, but we try harder. We're putting our name on the line. We can't afford to give you a dirty car. We can't afford to give you windshield wipers that don't wipe. We can't afford to give you dirty ashtrays. We presented a company that was willing to work for you. It was sort of like tacking up the manifesto on the door. And the one thing I'm sure we did is kind of write a manual for the whole rent-a-car business. I think we hit a chord. People talked about it a lot. They were intrigued by it. So when people started to say, hey, we saw your ad and it's terrific, everybody kind of perked up. They began to be very proud. And the whole organization changed. The cars got better care. The customers got better care. They began to get a lot more customers. Their advertising has included the We Try Harder for years.
So that was just Paula explaining, you know, 50 years of We Try Harder. Actually, she just got inducted into the One Club Hall of Fame along with Steve Jobs earlier this year. So, you know, one thing that this brought up for us was, how do you imagine a campaign that's lived on for 50 years, you know, in all its iteration and it's still live, right? What was the fundamental insight that we could tap into, which is relevant to our modern audiences today? And the point that you made is, you know, user-generated content, that even if brands don't ask us, we are generating content, right? What happens, especially in service-based business, is, you know, with all, you know, with the soapbox that all of us have available on the social networks and, you know, blogs and what have you, we comment freely, you know, about our experiences. But more often than not, we comment about bad experiences and, you know, the wisdom tooth being plucked out experience, as you mentioned, rather than when things go right, right? So a challenge for a brand is, how do you flip it on its head where you give people those opportunities to tell them, to, you know, and tell the world when things go right, and for the brand to go and address people, you know, when they've had a bad experience, to ameliorate, you know, some of the bad feelings that may have arisen because of that. And that's what we're tapping into, you know, working with Avis on this ad. So, enough talking. So what this ad simply does is, you know, it flips a model that Avis has been following for a few years, where they receive a lot of letters from customers via email or handwritten notes saying, this is what happened to me, right? And then Avis picks a few of those and turns them some into TV commercials, some of them into, you know, animated banner ads, and that's how they market about how Avis tries harder. We said, what if we could use modern natural language processing, you know, with some video compositing, and could let somebody just write a letter in a display ad and return them a 30-second narrated, beautifully animated video of their story. So everybody can get a little 30-second personal ad made about their story. So I'm now going to switch to that demo on how we generate these videos in real time. And because this is still in beta, I have been given a few letters from my engineers about things that will actually work and not break. You know, that's a big risk about doing live demos of betas. So think about it, like, things that can happen with a rental car. You could lose a thing, you know, you lost your cell phone, lost your bag, shoe, something. or you know your car broke down, or you know you were on vacation, you packed in more luggage than you needed, and you needed an upgrade, right? And it's trying to bring all those stories out to life through these ads. So let's take one of these.
So you're taking a real story and you're going to put it in a display ad?
Yes.
I mean, is that a little risky?
It is.
Just start typing. Okay. Let's see what you got.
So it is actually risky, right, in terms of a brand. I mean, people could type anything into it. So this is a letter that they received from Katie, who had conveniently rented the car in. It's going to be a test of my spellings. And her rental car was a BMW 328i. And she was help. Who did she write to? Oh. And she was generally very happy with the service, let's say, right? And so now it's a question. Tell us your story. And I'm going to write this letter in natural language and see what this comes up, right? The souvenir...
I'm going to watch.
Okay. The souvenir dinosaur, let's say cuddly dinosaur. Cuddly dinosaur that I got for my son fell out of my bag. He was unhappy at home, but Avis mailed it back to me next day. Right. So let's just take the inputs, right? Katie wrote a story about her rental from Mountain View, and when she returned the car, she forgot some a cuddly dinosaur soft toy she had bought for her son, and he was unhappy because he was expecting it, and Avis returned it. Let's see what happens.
Story has been sent.
Every piece of customer feedback helps us learn how we can try harder for the next customer. Like this one from Katie. After stopping by one of our branches in Mountain View, she realized she misplaced her cuddly dinosaur. Was it in the glove box? Under the seat, trapped behind the bathroom sink. Romeo, the Avis rep on duty, was happy to help, searching high and low until he found the item and mailed it back to where it belonged. When you're the underdog, you try harder. We can't afford not to return the lost item or have low gas tanks or worn wipers for that matter. Avis, we try harder.
All right.
Pretty slick. Pretty slick.
So as you saw in that video, right, Katie's name coming up, Mountain View, all those pieces were dynamically composed, 30-second video in under 10 seconds right in front of you, right? And the idea there was, again, like very simple things that have existed, natural language processing systems, video compositing systems that we've all used, but just put together in a slightly unique way.
Wait, so you're saying that that's not just something special that Google only could do? I mean, I think this is a really important point.
Yeah.
We are constantly entering into discussions in which there's a hope and an expectation that there's a new technology that can be taken advantage of to be able to bring bare brilliance onto a new advertising challenge. When in fact, what I just heard you describe was existing technology.
Yeah.
And basically just rethinking how it can be used, sort of using the Da Vinci principle, putting things together in an interesting, new, and different way to create an entirely new experience that no one else had thought of.
Yeah, absolutely right. Okay. Again, this project experiment, right, is less about, hey, we've got cool technology to play with. No, this is very off-the-shelf technology. Mm-hmm. The entire experiment is actually in the process of how you make ads, and not so much in the tools that you make ads with, right? And that's where we've been come up with, like, bringing the engineers in the room on day one with the art director and the copywriter. Change the perspective, because if an art and copy director, does not know about natural language processing and what you can do with it, he's never going to come up with an idea like this.
That's right.
But the engineer was able to build, the logic behind this, while the art director, the linguist and the copywriters were able to make, ensure that the story that you saw entertained you. It had heart. The animations made sense. The audio that was flowing was beautifully stitched together instead of sounding like this, what lack of dynamic systems sound like, right, when you talk to IVRs. So that's something that is truly different in terms of the process, not so much the products. So now I'm going to go to a little plug for you about Wisdom of the Crowds that you were talking about, right?
Oh, really?
Well, you said, we always ask people, and you've been a big proponent of this, in all the meetings that we've had, about brands have to take risks, right?
Yeah.
And you deal with this on a day-to-day basis in your job in trying to convince brands not just, you know, as we discussed earlier, digital marketing, but marketing for the digital age, right? So now that you've seen this demo, actually you've seen this before as well, but what were your thoughts, you know, to share with the audience?
Well, I think the theme of risk-taking really is one that's resonating, certainly for me, and I'm hoping for others, because this is a huge choice for a brand. And I think that you as advertisers yourselves are trying to sell through why it's worth taking a risk, you know, to some of your best partners. And that's not always an easy task. And so I'm assuming that there's a certain amount of controls that are considered so that you don't have too much damage control to have to concern yourself with after the fact. So, yeah, I mean, I really believe that the opportunity to engage in the dialogue with your customers is invaluable. We have to be able to test and iterate both our messages that we're pushing out and that we're, you know, that's based on what we're hearing back. And really, you know, we want as brands to have an opportunity to address misperceptions. So a lot of times, you know, many of you probably have all heard a horror story about getting your wisdom teeth taken out, or a horror story about what the airline did to you to, you know, leave you in San Diego in the middle of the night. Those horror stories stick, and they end up as dinner conversation. And so if you don't have an opportunity to share them and have them resolved, they will live on in perpetuity and only get worse and find friends. And so I really believe in the value of getting people to participate in the conversation once and for all, and then having the brands be able to address it.
Actually, that's a very good point. Like, I mean, I've been a marketer for 6 years, and that's a fundamental challenge I always face. You know, you love when people write great things about you, but you also have to manage when, you know, you don't do as well. So this is, again, another experiment on how do you take, you know, the soapbox and the vox populi and turn it, you know, in favor of the brand and make people your advocates. So now this is actually a plug for you and what you do in terms of how do these guys go and make it happen, right? Because at the end of the day, we've done our experiments.
Right.
But as you mentioned earlier, the aspiration is to kickstart a conversation about how we don't see four of these, but 400 of these a year.
I don't have a lot to say on this. Yeah. I think it's kind of a call to action that is, you know, Google is traditionally very good at facilitating, and we have access to good information about new and interesting platforms, some of which are our own. But we are not purely insight-driven ourselves. We have access to great data that could actually help formulate great strategy, but we're not that good at synthesizing it, and that's what brilliant paid professionals in the industry are meant to do. And the same is true in terms of creative concepting. We are good instigators in terms of spark and possibility, but I think a lot of times when things are open-ended, where there's just like, what do you got? You know, it doesn't ever really go anywhere in terms of brands getting the most out of a Google platform or any other digital platform versus really being able to say, huh, well, how could I actually engage in the conversation and yet not terrify my client thinking that people are going to be swearing about their brand day in and day out? Let me see what kind of controls are available to me that I could potentially leverage. So I'm not going to go on and on about this. I think working with us is really just about pushing us to try to answer key questions that allow you to basically create something brilliant. Is that good?
Yeah.
All right.
I've actually really wanted to say this on stage for a very long time.
Oh.
There's one more thing.
Ooh.
So, you know, the last campaign that we worked on was with Coca-Cola. And this is actually one of the most iconic ads, not just in Coca-Cola's history, but also television history in America and how advertising was done. So this spot called Hilltop. How many of you have heard of it? Just raise your hand. Wow, okay. You see, 40 years on, it still lives on. And it was a spot that was done, you know, in light of just the end of Vietnam War had ended, and there was a lot of, you know, conflict around the world, right? And Coca-Cola, you know, from what they told us and what Harvey Gabor, who's the art director on this campaign, told us, at that point had been a beverage that refreshed you. But what this spot did was it gave it an aspiration. It became more than a beverage that refreshed you. It became a way people connected with each other. It became a message of hope and tolerance, right? So let's actually remind ourselves of the original spot that Harvey directed.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honey bees and so white turtle doves. I like to teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
Thing. I've actually heard that song so many times. I sing that when I, you know, in elevators. It's pretty sticky.
Yeah.
But actually, let's think about this, right? In 1971, that was a promise. You know, a promise that said, you can connect with each other by buying the world a Coke. And what we've gone ahead and done this year with, in a partnership with Coca-Cola and led by Harvey, actually, from, you know, was to actually let you buy the world a Coke. So we built these special vending machines, six of which exist in the world right now in South Africa, Cape Town, New York, Buenos Aires, and then there are a couple of other places. And what you can do is from a phone or from your desktop, you record a video or text message, send it to it with a free Coke, and an unsuspecting passerby at one of these machines gets a free Coke with your message and can respond back to you with a similar video or text message. So we're going to do a live demo of that right now with one of the machines in New York. Okay. So where did we go? This is actually a shot of our machine in Buenos Aires. Okay. So I'm going to start this. Network.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honey bees and snow white turtle doves. I'd like to teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
Perfect harmony. Perfect harmony. I'd like to buy the world.
So I'm going to send a free Coke to a friend who's actually waiting at one of the vending machines in New York. I may have called him before this presentation, like, just be there at 5:55. So let's start the message, right, as the machines I was talking about. Of course, there's one in Mountain View, but apparently people in West Coast don't like working on weekends. So say New York. Let's start with this. Of course, flash cookie. Allow that. All right. So... is it Blair on the machine?
You want some powder?
Hello, New York. This is Armand live from South by Southwest. Hope you enjoy this Coke.
Woo! All right.
Hello, New York. This is... send it. It's going to fly.
To teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
So either I can wait in the ad at this point or give my email and get a response back. Instead, because I have a cheat link, I'm going to go to a live stream straight from New York where the machine is. Start this. And I'm using, you know, a special editing line. I have to be honest, I was expecting a very tall, you know, man with a laptop to be receiving it. I have no idea who that was. So, right. So what happens, you know, let's just recap. While that, you know, machine's being processed, you can imagine we do have a moderation system to make sure, you know, it's legal and what stuff comes back from vending machines. You don't want to play chat roulette with vending machines. But, you know, ultimately, you know, what we're doing, if you look at it, this entire about 1.5 minutes, recorded an HD video message, transcoded it, moderated it, sent it all the way to New York. Well, that woman luckily happened to be there, received the Coke, recorded her message, and sent it back. And it should be arriving any point at this point. Well, while we wait for that, what you can actually do is you can go and look at a lot of these you know, responses that we have received from the world. So this is a pretty interesting one in what we do here.
Hi, it's Jason here from London. I thought I'd say hi to you guys in Cape Town and send you a Coke. I hope you're good there. And I know it's a lot warmer than it is in London right now. So you're going to enjoy that Coke.
Thank you guys for the coke that you give it to me. My name is Sizwe. I'm here in Cape Town, South Africa. Guys, I appreciate what you did for me. I thank you very much. I appreciate it. God bless you. Thank you.
Right. So that was a sample video.
I mean, why is that so good? It's so good every time I have seen it, but
well,
it is.
We're going to see our little video now.
You know, it's not, it never gets old.
So before I play this video, I'm going to have a geek moment, right? We have dynamically composited two videos with the motion graphics that you saw, moderated, and done the whole thing in under 60 seconds, right? And the funny thing, as I said about this, no new technology. It's just using building blocks. I'm not going to give away what you did, but, you know, but some media servers, you know, hosting services, which you can actually use to build something like this, and it was done in about, we cracked it in about 8 weeks or so.
Okay, don't play it yet, because you go to the left side, okay. And I'm going to go to the right side and say, I'm having a not geek moment, I'm okay. Having a heartfelt moment, because, I mean, wasn't that video good, and there are more of those stories. This is not about a can of Coke. This is about paying off that promise of wanting to connect with other people in the world. And that promise made in 1972,
one,
thank you, I mean, is very feasible today with all kinds of technology. But when you have that kind of sight, sound, and motion that's been facilitated by the technology to really pay it off, it sends chills down the back of my spine. So that is my right brain heartfelt moment. You can go back to your geekdom now.
You do realize geeks are cooler here, right?
Well, I need
just
a
kidding.
Graphic tee.
Okay. Fine, you get that point.
Hello, New York. This is, I'm on live from South by Southwest. Hope you enjoy this Coke.
So let's get back for our lecture.
Beautiful. And that really was truly amazing. I can't say anything more, so...
So how about we show a little video from a field
test?
Would
you like to? Let's just end it on that.
Okay. And right on time.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for coming. Just play it.
Oh,
Buenos Aires.
Muchas gracias por la coca. Saludos de Buenos Aires.
Hey, it's me, Billy Lani. I'm wishing you a great Christmas. Thanks for the call.
Hi, I'm Lee from Cape Town. Thank you very much for this call. Thank you.
Me encanta. La voy a disfrutar mucho.
Got the Coke, thanks, Dave.
Thank you. That's the best Coke I've ever had.
That's it. All right. That's everything.
Thank you, everyone.
That's everything. Thank you for coming. Check out projectrebrief.com. Some Googlers will be sticking around if you have any additional questions. Go get yourself a refreshing beverage, possibly a Coke. Possibly not.
No free Cokes around here.
Thank you again.